You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
That you're awesome. I'm glad I'm not a possum, cause I'm awesome. And that's awesome with you.
What is up, guys? Thank you for checking in on episode. Oh my god, what episode are we on? Episode 34 of That's Awesome with Joe. I'm Joe. First off, thank you guys for all of the birthday wishes. I had a birthday 2 days ago, and all my socials were flooded with so much stuff, so thank you for that. If you are not following me as an Ice Nine Kills fan, or if you are, I guess, we are hosting an AMA with me in the Ice Nine Kills app on Saturday afternoon. If you're interested in that, make sure you download the app and jump on and do all that stuff that you're supposed to do. I'm not really sure what it is. I think you got to enter using some points or something. But yeah, I will see you all there if you guys are there. Let's see, what else is going on? Let's just talk about this episode. I've been super excited about this one for a while. I recorded this episode on the porch at Drew Folks, aka Wizard Blood Studio, while Spencer, Dan, and myself were working on some tunes over there. Yam House is my guest on this week. They're like my favorite discovery of this year. You'll find out very, very quickly in this episode how much I respect what this band is doing and how much of a fan I am. If you've been listening to the podcast a lot, you know I'm a huge nerd for songwriting, and you probably know that I love pop music, and these guys do both of those things incredibly well. This was my first time talking to them, and I'm really glad that we had a chance to talk and I was able to sit down and interview everyone in the band, which is great. Super awesome dudes. I hope we get to actually hang out more in the future. And I also think like this is a cool episode because it's a real-time glimpse into a band that has set goals for themselves and is actively working toward them. So I don't know. I feel like this band, like the sky is the limit and they're about to pop any second. So definitely take a listen. This is going to be a peek into the archives for them in the future when they look back on what they were doing before they blew up and became the biggest band in the world. So without further ado, let's send it over to Yam House. Here with the band Yam House. Guys, thank you so much for joining us.
Yo,
yeah,
what's up?
I'm here.
Yeah, this is the first time, and I know I said this before we started recording, that I've had a full band on, not just one or two people. So this is really fun. And I will say, and I just said this before too, but I got to say it on the episode. You guys just look so wholesome right now. And like you're like really friends and like drinking coffee and you're in sweaters and stuff.
Sweaters, dude.
You got sweaters on.
Yeah, still wholesome wearing sweaters.
Mostly survival.
Yeah, wholesome wearing sweaters. But before we start, why don't you guys, if you don't mind, just give us a little brief intro, who you are, what your band is called, and you know, all the boring stuff that you kind of have to do on this stuff, you know?
Yeah, dude, round the horn.
Should I start?
Yeah, go ahead.
All right, my name is Zach, and I play the bass guitar.
My name is Lars, and I sing and play some guitar and piano. I'm Seth. I play lead electric.
I'm Jake. I'm the drummer.
Ready? And we're
Yam House.
We practice that. Really good.
Sweet Potato Shack was already taken and had a lot of copyright problems, so we stuck with Yam House.
Yam House.
You're just a big fan of the Nightshades.
Yo, we gotta have them.
Yeah.
So where does the name come from?
We lived in a house together when we started the band, and it was called the Yam House, like without any intention of that becoming our band name. And we spent a year trying to find a band name as we were making our first record.
That's brutal, finding a band
name. And it was really brutal.
We wanted something that was like fully like available.
Scotch free legally.
Sure. Like the most rare.
Like someone's, you're not going to get any different Google searches and stuff.
Yeah, right.
We're not going to have some clothing company call us 5 years down the line and say that they have a copyright or something weird. Yeah, and so one of the people we worked with was like, what if you just called it Yam House? And we were like, no. And then a year later, we were like, fine. So it was like the name we hated least. And Yam stands for You Are Me, which is a moniker we feel like we can get behind of like being good to each other, being good to our fans, encouraging just kind of the golden rule. But that's how it started.
Yep.
I love the name. It's catchy. Like, thanks, I remember it. You know,
that's good. A lot of people think it's a German pronunciation. They say Yam Haas.
Yeah, there's some funny pronunciations that people come up with,
and that's fine. We will accept that as well. Yam Haas.
I love it. Yam Haas. So let me give you guys a little brief intro on my exposure to you guys as well, because you are one of the only bands that I have really sought out to have on this podcast.
Wow,
what the heck?
I am like a huge fan.
Okay. Wow. Thanks, man.
I discovered I want to say it was just an Apple Music playlist or something, like just based on my listening habits, you guys like came into my playlist and it was The Thrill. And I was this is the fucking best song. It put me in such a good mood. I was like dancing. I showed my girlfriend immediately. She's like, this band's fucking awesome. And
hell
so
yeah,
I've been
man.
Like nonstop listening since hell then. Yeah. I think I've showed more people your band than like I've shown my own band.
So, oh my God.
I'm a very awesome. Big fan. And I'm really excited to learn more about you guys. But I mean, just like, so I like I told you before we started, I'm a huge nerd with like songwriting and stuff. And I have already shamelessly ripped off your music.
That's the highest compliment.
That's the highest honor that you could get. Seriously.
Yes. But nothing that's quite hit that level that you guys are at yet. I'm really inspired by your sound, though.
God damn, man. Dude. Can we just wrap this podcast down?
That's all we need.
Yeah, so thank you guys for coming on.
It's all downhill from here, man. You're going to find out how uncool we are.
But also, I wanted to mention, I remember, like, I was listening to you guys. I'd been listening to for you for maybe 2 months or so, 2 or 3 months. And I told you before, I'm a big hockey fan, and I learned that a couple of you guys are as well. And I heard don't remember who it was mention you guys on Spit and Chiclets.
Oh yeah,
that's right.
Yeah, yeah.
It was
It was there you go. Yeah, I was like, is this band like blowing up under like? And I didn't know about it because it was on like Chiclets and stuff too. So it seems like everyone that hears you guys like falls in love and wants to tell everyone.
Yeah,
to
it's funny
that professional athletes are now shouting you guys out on hockey podcasts.
Yeah, we played like me and Lars played in like a celebrity like hockey like charity game in Minneapolis because there's just like hockey games going on all the time.
Right,
and I was on Ryan Malone's team, and I just was like, yeah, I'm in a band. And then, like, next week, I had buddies texting me, like, dude, you guys are on Spitting Chiclets. I was like, oh, my God.
Yeah, I was like, first of all, what is Spitting Chiclets? Yeah. And then second of all, this is amazing. Yeah, I had no idea.
He's a good dude.
So cool.
He's a good dude.
He's talking
it's
about
a huge podcast.
I do dishes with his family listening to Groovin'.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Awesome. That's
encouraging. I mean, you guys are like that good time, like just throw it on and it just puts me in a good mood every time.
Party time.
It's cool.
Yeah. So I want to learn a little bit about like your history though. Like where did the band, how did it start? You guys mentioned you kind of all lived in a house together, right?
Yep. Mm. Yeah. We were living together. We're all from the Midwest. Three of us grew up in high school together, and then we met Jake, our drummer, in college. And we just kind of did the classic, what I think probably you guys can relate to, maybe people listening, is like you just want to be in a band with your friends and kind of see if that can be some crazy viable career choice, you know, doing, chasing the dream together. And we just decided to do it. We dropped everything. I think in 2017 is when we all quit our jobs. And we were just like, let's just try to, you know, we played a ton of weddings. We've played dive bar gigs. We've just been hustling musicians together, trying to build the brand and build the identity and write a lot of songs. And we've had some awesome people come alongside us to support us along the way. And yeah,
that's, so you said you were playing like weddings and stuff.
Yeah.
Our first show ever was a wedding.
Yep.
And
like playing original music or like just doing like the wedding
band? It was
band,
kind
right?
of a weird situation.
Yeah, we did both. It was actually an ex-girlfriend of Zach's, not the one getting married, but
her cousin.
But her cousin, and Zach left enough.
Wait, so you're
my ex-girlfriend's cousin.
Your
yeah.
ex-girlfriend's wedding?
No, my ex-girlfriend's cousin's wedding.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It would have been cooler if it was her wedding. That would have been cool.
I thought it was your ex-girlfriend's wedding and then you married her cousin.
That would be really good. Crazy. Yeah, there'd have to be a movie or something about that.
Yeah. So yeah, it's just kind of like a normal story of a bunch of dudes wanting to play music together, right?
I know. You mentioned we look really wholesome right now. We're kind of the antithesis of rock stars, you know, like we like to get a good full night's sleep. None of us have any drug habits.
You're speaking my language, man.
Aren't too much of a problem, at least not yet. We're all just very much friends, and that isn't, you know, forced, which feels really good. It helps when you're in the ups and downs of the music industry.
For sure.
To genuinely just like not hate being together is really good.
When you were saying that, I saw a video, I think it was this morning, I was just scrolling through Instagram. One of you was teaching someone else how to whistle.
Oh yeah.
That was a big deal, dude.
That's wholesome content right there.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it was a genuine moment too. I had no idea that Seth was going to be filming. Oprah, our manager, has been texting us, trying to stay honest about remembering to just like film random shit. And she was like, when you guys are in Nashville, just like pull your cameras out every once in a while, because she puts these things out on YouTube called Yam Cam. And we used to do vlogs and be way overboard about filming everything for like a year.
Every day of our lives.
Every day of our lives we do a vlog. And so we got sick of that. And so we've almost gone too far the other way, where we've like forgotten to like document what we do. So Oprah's been pushing us, and Seth just whipped out his phone in the middle of a genuine moment where we were trying to together kind of get Jake to a point of whistling, and it happened, which was magical.
That was a good moment.
can you still do it?
I actually tried again this morning. I've been trying to practice.
You gotta try.
Yeah, I might as well give it a whirl. Here we go, buddy. I gotta focus. It's the lips, the position of lips.
Yeah.
A little bit.
A little bit.
See, I got it.
He's finding his voice.
Honestly, wasn't as good when he taught me in the moment, though.
That was the
best yet. Yeah.
Yeah, it was a crispy whistle. man. So you guys start the band. You're, I guess, playing ex-girlfriend's cousin's weddings. Were you guys recording music at this time too? Or do you guys I was looking through your feed. Do you self-produce?
We do self-produce, but we also bring in producers too. We kind of have an open-handed approach to all of that. I think we just refuse to sit back and expect people to do anything for us, but we're also very open to people that are better at music than we are to come alongside us and help us, you know, create, you know, even better versions of our music than we could on our own. So I would say now it's a pretty beautiful hybrid. And I think it should probably stay that way. You know, I've thought a lot about that dynamic between like producer artist, producer band. And I think when you get into trouble is when you go too far one way or the other, unless you're like Beck or somebody who can just disappear and come out of the woods with like a fully self-produced perfect record. I don't think any of us are that person, but we also don't want to be like posers either, who like don't know
there is a very delicate balance, and I think you can get like you were saying, you can get carried away on either end, right? Like you want to remain true to your vision and stuff, and this is something that I think every musician has struggled with at some point in their lives. It's like, how much control do I want to give or give up to someone else at the expense of my vision, but you know, the benefit of the commercial product or whatever, right?
Sure. What's your situation? Because you're in the studio right now.
Yeah. So right now, we're writing for Ice Nine, my band.
Sweet.
But we yesterday I was at a different studio writing for someone else. You know, that's what's great about LA too. Is just, you know, and especially the only good thing in the music industry about quarantining so far is everyone is just writing music.
Yeah, it's cool.
So there will be a lot of content over the next year and a half or so, and then probably not a lot of work for me in the next year and a half releasing stuff. But yeah. But we'll be heading out on the road hopefully at some point.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. So what about you guys? Like, let's go back. Let's talk about recent history, because I want to touch on what we were talking about before. You guys were stuck in Nashville, you said, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you were recording in Nashville?
Oh, we were just songwriting mostly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which was
super. So what happened?
We were supposed to be there for 7 days or
9 days.
We were supposed to be there for nine.
Yeah.
And we were there for
12.
It sounds like not that big of a deal, but we were just like so stoked to finally get home, and then like an insane storm hit, and we just had like flight cancellation after flight cancellation, God. And like staying all in the same hotel room, which is, that's super fun and is a good time. But like at the end of 3 days, you're like, get me the hell out of here.
Yeah. When you have an end date in mind, you mentally prepare yourself. Like, this is how much I can deal with in one room with a bunch of people. Right.
Exactly.
Mentally prepare.
You know,
that sucks.
There was a little Mexican restaurant down the street that was open. That was great.
Yep.
Only restaurant in town open in Nashville during the ice storm.
But dude, we're from Minneapolis. So like snow and ice is part of our life, you know, like 9 months of the year, but down there, like they just
can't handle it.
They can't handle it, man. It's like the apocalypse.
Yeah. It's scary.
I remember on one of the first tours I did, I think it was like 2010 or 2011. We were playing some like bar in South Carolina, and it snowed like less than an inch, and the entire city shut down. They closed all the bridges, and they canceled the show. It was like an absolute nightmare situation. We just like drove off. We're like, it's no big deal. We'll just go to Georgia. Whatever. It's crazy. But yeah, I mean, I was, you know, people like even in Texas now, no one has the infrastructure to handle even that kind of stuff. It's really sad and frustrating.
Yeah, we were kind of joking. We're at the airport in Nashville, and we finally boarded the plane, and we were still like fingers crossed that we're going to fly out. We weren't sure because snow was starting to come down again. And we looked out the window, and all we saw was one guy with a shovel. And we're like, I think this is the ice crew right here.
Yeah.
Like one down shovel. South, all they have one shovel for the whole airport.
For an entire runway.
One glove like, on.
T-shirt. It was awesome.
But up until that moment, it was amazing. Like we were writing for 8 or 9 days, and we were writing with a bunch of different writers, like usually different writers every single day, just trying to make make stuff.
Nashville, man. Were you doing the typical Nashville session where there was like one guy doing vocal stuff with you, one guy doing music?
No,
it was kind of a revolving door though. It was close to that. We just signed a little production deal with a guy named Mark Needham, who has just been such a great, like sort of rounding out of our team, because we have management that we just signed with last year that we really love. And we haven't physically met yet, which is hilarious.
Yeah. Isn't that weird?
And then we have like personal management with, somebody named Oprah, who maybe you've been going back and forth with to set this up.
Josh has. Yeah.
Cool. So she's amazing. She's local here. We know her personally and she's on the team. And then, this Mark Needham deal came to fruition sort of at the start of when everything was closing down. And he's basically just afforded us the opportunity to, like, he just keeps throwing people in the room with us. And so far we haven't really had like, oh man, that was really discouraging, or like, we didn't click with that person. So far it's just been so fun to like meet with different songwriters and just come up with stuff. So we probably wrote like 9 songs, in that
that's
trip.
Great.
And so we'll take you know, a few of them if we really like them, and maybe, you know, try to use that to, you know, take some further steps. And we are shooting for, you know, I think it's really important too for like artists and bands to like set their goals on what they want to do. And we really want to be a big pop band. Like we want to be a big international pop band. And we understand that's very not likely to happen, but that's like informing our decisions. So we're trying to land like the major label deal right now. And so that's been kind of this fun, strange journey. And Mark has been a huge help in that and kind of shopping us and getting us prepared to sort of try to pitch something to some A&R people. And in the meantime, we have this amazing little sweet organic fan base of people that we are just trying to stay as connected to as possible right now.
Yeah, your fans love you guys. You have a great fan base.
They are grateful good to us. Man. Yeah, we're super grateful, man.
People have been so supportive, even in our immediate community since day one.
Yeah.
It's been cool.
Have you seen, like, how has the whole quarantine been for your band? Have you guys seen, like, growth in anything, or is it kind of stagnant?
The only thing that's been really helpful is kind of doing the live stream thing. Something we started early on in quarantine is playing bingo together, which was one of Seth's crazy creative ideas, where we kind of just
decided to
pull up and get together, and people could enter boards, and we just like literally play three rounds of bingo every Thursday night. Awesome. And we did that all throughout this last year, and it was a cool way of like still maintaining interaction with fans. When it's tough to just actually play a show, you know, every week.
I know.
It's old.
You guys did a couple of live stream stuff though, right? Yeah, how'd that go? I watched the, who was it? It was a Michelob.
Oh yeah. The Michelob and Light one.
I mean, live streams are, they're great for what they are. They're definitely not satisfying as live shows, but they serve a purpose and we're happy.
I mean, I love watching them as a fan, being able to see people play music is great. Yeah, but I know what you mean. Like the performance part of it is kind of weird,
right? It sort of feels like you're bombing, because big thing we do is, you know, you feed off the energy of people watching, and like not in like a narcissistic way as much as like, okay, like you guys are having fun, so we're having fun, and then vice versa, and it gets really contagious. But when you're doing a live stream, you just kind of have to dig deep and after every song be like, all right, next song.
I hope you're excited out there. We hear nothing.
But it's
we good. Actually took a completely different approach to the live stream thing. We like we had a filmed show that we did at a sold out hometown show, and like our band is all, we're like a horror metal themed band.
Oh, yes. Everything's
scary. That's and awesome. Like every song we write is about a different horror movie, and we have like actors and costumes and all that shit.
Rules.
It's crazy, but we did our live stream was that show, but we filmed a movie around it. So it was presented like a live stream that one of the dudes from The Devil's Rejects actually hosted the live stream. There was a whole storyline that was happening because they would cut in and out of the concert footage and we were all getting murdered.
Oh, I want to watch that.
That's awesome.
I'll try to find you. It's gone now. The link is gone, but I'll see if I can find you.
Please.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty fun. Our band is very like theatrical with that stuff, so it's very big important part of it. So
we just like played our songs, and then at the end of it, we're like, I guess we should go to our next song.
So I've attended a couple live stream filmings now, and I don't. Even in the crowd, like, well, the quote unquote crowd, right? Sure, yeah. Like me and like five other people watching, being like, is it worse if I like clap now?
Yeah, like, there's like three people.
Is it sound bad if there's like just two people clapping?
Yeah.
And like, is it weird for them to then say thank you too? Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I'm just trying not to make it more awkward.
Yeah. Live shows always, I feel like, have an element. You know, even when there isn't a pandemic, like live shows always have this like beautifully awkward element to them that I actually love. But then there's ways that you overcome it, right? That makes it like super memorable and worth it. But what's tough about the live streams is that you just have the awkward parts and less of the tools around you to like overcome them. So you're just kind of like way more aware of it. But it's super good for us because at the end of the day, it just reminded us like, okay, I do really just love sitting in the room with the four of us and just playing our songs down. Yeah. So in a lot of ways, it's like what helped my brain mentally, like, you know, I guess lean into it more is like we're just basically doing a band rehearsal and you guys get to like tune in,
right,
and we're
right.
just hanging out with each other, knowing that some of you are watching or whatever. But so yeah. that helped my brain. We're doing more of them, I think, soon.
We have one like pretty soon.
We have one in like a couple weeks. So yeah.
Oh, great. Do you guys, when you're writing or just hanging out, do you play, like, I guess, especially when you're writing, do you all write together like in a room jamming out, or are you doing like computer work stuff?
It's very different. Yeah. All the above.
All the above really? Would be the correct answer. Yeah. Cause we haven't had as much chance. Last time we played together, like full on instruments in a room, was in December of last year. So we're actually all really itching right now to get back to some sense of rehearsal, which we're going to have to do for this live stream anyways. So right. lately it's been computer writing, and obviously you have a guitar and a bass and a MIDI keyboard in the room and a mic to sing. And then programming drums has been kind of the vibe for now on those writing sessions.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I think the more we don't force ourselves to think this is what has to be happening for us to create good music. I think the more we can peel that away from like our mindset, I feel like the better we do, because good songs have come from every environment thus far, I would say.
Yeah.
You know,
great.
Even like Seth just did a little bedroom production thing that he sent over. Then Jake remotely did some drum programming to it. And then we brought that track to Nashville. And the next thing you know, together, we're all writing melodies and lyrics to it and just kind of feeling the vibe in the room. So it's super Frankenstein. And I think that's the privilege of being alive today when recording technology is as bonkers as it is. Like, you can do anything, anywhere, anytime with anyone. So that's pretty crazy.
It is. And I'm actually envious of even the amount of playing that you guys have gotten to do together. Cause the last time I played live was we were on tour with Papa Roach in Europe, and
no way.
It got canceled because due to COVID.
Sure.
And I haven't seen my instrument since then.
Wow.
Like, it's still with our freight. And when I write now, like, I have a guitar and a bass at home, but like when I, especially because for some reason I've just been writing a ton of heavy music and stuff that I just can't play. I program guitars and bass and everything.
Oh,
so
I haven't
like picked up an instrument and played with people in far too long. I'm like actually ruining music for myself.
It's good to know we're not alone. I think sometimes we look at each other and we're like, are we the worst band ever? Cause we haven't seen each other in 2 weeks. But I think we have a pretty high standard of like being together, which is
It sounds like you guys are very tight. Like, you're writing together. You're all involved with everything. That's not how a lot of bands are these days, especially in a situation like yours, where there's like, you know, where you want to work with other songwriters and producers. It's usually like, I don't know. I think it's great that all of you are involved, but I find it usually is like one dude taking charge and kind of everyone else, you know?
Right. Yeah, we try to kill that dynamic as best we can. I think that everybody has their different opinions about what typical band dynamic should look like. But I think there's so many examples of, like, I don't know, bands in different periods of time having like the guy who, like, for instance, Fall Out Boy, like the bass player is writing all these crazy lyrics,
right.
And then the singer's coming in singing it. I think there's just so many ways to do it that. I think our biggest rule is just like, don't force anything. If follow the momentum, follow the heat. If there's something that all of us are looking at each other going, this is good, then let's do it. It doesn't matter who came up with it or who didn't come up with it, or, you know.
No egos.
No, yeah. Egos are such a waste of creative energy, and they're actually the antithesis of creativity, because creativity is so open and it's like a kid. Mm-hmm. And then we grow up and we become super self-conscious and we think it should go a certain way. And you just have to constantly be hacking that down to use like heavy death metal. You know, we have to murder that every day. Stab it to death. Stab your ego to death. Rip it out.
Right. I agree, man. And that's goes back to what you were talking about with like working with other people too, right? Like, there's a balance to that. Like you were saying, like, it's always good to have external feedback, whether or not you take it or not. Right. Like, but you have to take it as like, when the person tells you something, like, I don't really love that riff, it's not like a personal attack. It's just an opinion, right?
Yep.
And I think you can take it or leave it, but probably good advice to take it.
Is like what Lauren said this earlier too, is like just having unified goals of like, what are we trying to accomplish? Because like if the four of us have like individual goals that are all conflicting with each other, and then we say this is our main goal, like we want to be a big band that has popular, makes popular music, and that requires a lot of things that don't come natural to us, you know? Mm-hmm. So like, I think just being open enough to each other to realize that like my gut reaction sometimes is like not helpful for like what the actual goals are, you know?
Right.
Like,
right. Self-awareness.
For
yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. We're from the land of Bon Iver, where you write sad
right.
songs with cryptic lyrics that you don't even understand that make, you know.
What is he talking about ever?
I know. I don't know. I know.
To be full transparency,
yeah.
His last two albums are like two of my favorite albums of all time.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
I never know what the fuck he's saying.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of like Radiohead. It's kind of like Tom York.
Yeah.
I mean, it's
yeah.
like
yeah.
you're just singing things that perfectly phonetically line up with this strange melody that sounds really instinctual and not like it's trying or it's like overcrafting itself. It just feels
yeah.
so natural. And so
yeah.
it's hard for us sometimes. Being from that town and or being from, you know, we live 45 minutes from where Justin Vernon lives. And like, I think there's a culture here that's a lot more indie, a lot more like it's mostly just about you personally having your identity wrapped into your music so much so that you're like, I will forever suffer and never move out of this town as long as I can write honest songs. And I think early on, it just dawned on us, dawned on me, dawned on all of us together, like, that's what we'll do even if we don't make it as a pop band.
Right.
Like, I will always write sad, weird songs about my life because I want to, because that's like healing to me. And then
mm-hmm.
what's really exciting is this is like a vocation attempt at infusing elements of who I am and who I want to be into something that could transcend just like, you know, specific to my life story. And I guess, I don't know, it's just good to define those things like Seth was saying.
Yeah.
If you don't have that target together, it's so easy to get lost creatively. And so we do try to remind ourselves like, okay, what the hell is the goal here? We're trying to sell out arenas across the world. So let's make that decision.
Let me ask you this. With that goal in mind, can you give me some examples of how it's guided your decision-making?
I can give you 100 demos that probably won't see the light of day for another, you know, there's so many things that we just go, okay, beautiful song, super cool, super emotional, super vibey, but it's mid-tempo and the chorus doesn't smack you in the face.
Yeah,
so
right.
we're going to shelve it for now, even though that's a beautiful song. And I would say there's so many songs like that that we had that we love
mm-hmm. yeah.
that aren't, that right now we're just going, let's pause on that, put it out when we've built up more, you know, trust and equity with the people that have sort of pushed us into these worlds that have gatekeepers.
Right.
One example actually that I can think of outside of us, who's done it really well is Taylor Swift. You know, she's somebody who essentially conquered the pop world. You know,
right.
she released so many
yeah,
albums.
She's got a little fan base.
It's incredible. And she did it well. You know, everyone
yeah.
bought in to what she was doing for years. And now quarantine hits and she releases two full length albums
yep.
that are
right.
exactly that. It's more
yep.
of like the indie, you know, storytelling.
Home recording type shit, right?
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah
absolutely.
But
yeah.
it's awesome.
Yeah.
And people care
yeah, right.
listening to it because she's got
she
her foot in the door. She's already
built
up a fan base. You know,
right.
and it takes a long time to get there. And not saying that's exactly the formula that we want to follow. I think that it was really organic the way that it happened for Taylor. And I think it's cool. And we all respected it. But I think that's a good example of what
yeah.
could happen for us in real
right, yeah.
yep.
the case.
So what do you see as like kind of just, I'm curious because I've never actually thought about that approach from like starting a band and being like, yes, the goal is to play pop songs at an arena level.
Yeah.
What are like the milestones or like shorter term goals that you have to get there?
We set a goal to sell out the like coolest kind of like club in our town, First Avenue in Minneapolis.
I played there many times.
Yep.
Ooh.
Yep. So mm-hmm. we spent a whole year. We have these meetings every week where we go through our goals and we set goals each year. And some of them are like values based and some are like action based and results based. I'll never forget. I think Seth, or one of us was like, let's just say, let's put sell out First Avenue as one of our goals. And this is a time where we don't have any music out. We have, you know, uploaded 3 YouTube videos that have a total of like 100 views. And we're like, we're going to sell this 1500 capacity room by the end of the year. And I don't think we did it that year. I think we failed the first year. So, but every week we would look at that goal.
Pretty lofty goal, though.
So, and because back then we didn't even have the clout to like get on the phone to try to book that show. Like they're just like, uh-huh. Shut up. Like, who are you? But that led us down this rabbit trail to like, we every week we're like, all right, sell out First Avenue. Okay, we haven't done that, but why? Okay, we've talked to this person. Okay, that's. But it led to all these different little mini action steps. And then you flash forward 2 years later and we ended 2019 with a sold out First Avenue show.
That's sick.
So we failed. Technically, we set our goal, and then that goal created a bunch of little goals that we realized we didn't even know existed.
Yep.
Right.
So I don't know.
That's great.
It's crazy.
So you went from in the span of 2 years. To selling out that venue.
Yeah.
Do you know how many bands I've started in 2 years? I haven't been able to draw like 50 people to a show.
I think another thing that like we've done well is in like when 2017, when we got together and like, all right, this is what we want to do. And we started making music and talking about how we wanted this thing to go down, is like, it was very clear. And like, we were just like really hardcore about like, if we're going to do this, like we have to quit all other jobs and sources of revenue and like, you know, like burn the ship and just like figure out how to swim on our own, because
you really listening, Josh? Right?
We also said yes to every show that was.
Yeah. We said yes to every show. Almost.
We were like, hey, can you come play our Jewish like block party that we're going to have? We're like, yeah,
we
absolutely.
Synagogue. We played
a vegan Jewish block party. One of our favorite shows. Yep. Early on.
And like backyard, like graduation parties and
birthday
like,
parties.
Yeah.
Proms.
We did a prom party. In a basement.
Uh-huh.
That's amazing.
It sucked for like a year. It was awful.
Especially as like 25-year-old dudes like playing prom. It's like not that cool.
Wow.
But the goal is to be the biggest band in the world. So like it takes a lot of little victories to get like.
You guys are going to have a great story too.
Yeah.
Right? There's going to be a lot of footage like from.
Yeah.
There's a lot of
content.
Yeah. Wholesome content.
And honestly, we mentioned this briefly earlier, but another big factor early on was that vlog that we did every day.
Yeah.
You know, for 365 days, we're filming us just in our everyday lives, what we're doing to start a band. And a lot of the early videos, we had no idea what we were doing. It had nothing to do with music sometimes.
Right.
We were just messing around, but it kind of developed like our personality and our voice in the band.
Yeah,
and
people get more connected to your music as they get more connected to you personally.
You're right. And so something that happened is Halloween 2017, first year we ever played a show, we decided to do a surprise show 24 hours before. And all we had was our vlog and our social media following, which wasn't very large. But we had people that were consistently watching these videos that we're putting out every day.
Yeah.
And we announced it within 24 hours in our very first show that we ever played as Yam House. You know, we had probably 120 people show up.
Wow. Holy
and,
shit.
It just was a kind of surprising, first experience that gave us some momentum to kind of keep booking shows. And every time we play, you know, more people would come out. It was just kind of a cool organic thing.
So you're finding a lot of your success in actually just like the transparency in your approach to your fans.
Yeah,
for sure. We're not cool enough to be like,
stiff arm
people.
Zach and I just called you Jack.
Jack.
We've been friends for so long, he doesn't even know my goddamn
name. Our rhythm section is Jake and Zach, so our rhythm section is Jack. So that's cool. We watched Zach and I, I'll never forget this, in like 2015 or 2016, we watched a John Mayer talk at, I think it was Juilliard?
I think it was at Berkeley.
Or was it Berkeley?
Yeah.
One of the music school he went to, they invited him back to talk about.
Berkeley?
No, none of us went to Berkeley, but John Mayer went to Berkeley.
Oh, okay. I got gotcha.
Gave a talk as an alumni there.
And then they put it on YouTube because we're not good enough to go to Berkeley.
And we're sitting on our couch in our apartment watching John Mayer talk about songwriting and like setting your goals in the music industry. And that was his biggest thing, is like everybody in the room wants to be successful and to blow up, but not very few of you have even defined what that means. And that's why there's so many brokenhearted musicians walking around the earth, because they actually never took the time to define what success even means to them.
Wow, dude.
Because yeah, like
it really is simple, isn't it?
Big. Yeah, it is. Yeah. So we were like, let's just set our goals. We understand that this goal is not very easy and there's a huge chance the biggest chance ever that this will not work, but we use that goal to inform our decisions, right? So that's why it's like there's so many people who never define their goal, but yet deep down they really wanted to be a pop star, but they're in their bedroom writing indie, sad, contemplative tunes. They're writing Folklore and Evermore before they've ever written, you know, 1989 or Fearless or Red. Yeah. So like you gotta your decisions have to line up with what your goals are.
Which like the sad indie shit too is cool. And if that's the goal, then that's awesome. But a lot of people do that with the goal of being bigger in mind. It's just a tough thing to like see people not reach their goals because they don't really know what they are. Yeah. So that was important.
And there's unicorns out there that kind of confuse everybody. So like Justin Vernon is a unicorn. Like he
for sure.
He literally won the lottery and he deserves it. He's unbelievably talented. I'm such a fan of his music, but there's so much good, sad indie music out there that like your chances of that just finding its way to you is just a way harder bet than just being like, I'm going to freaking grab the bull by the horns and I'm telling everybody I want to be a star and then let the chips all that way. I'd rather fail that way than looking back being like, why didn't I just go for it? You know,
you guys are going to need to write like a manual. You're so organized in your thought process. Like these things that you're saying, it's like, yeah, I know them. But like when you say them, it's like, it's just different. Like me and, I always go back to this conversation that I was having years ago with our lead singer where, and this is before I was even in this band. It was just a friend of mine. And he was saying like, man, it's just like, you know, it just feels like we're not going anywhere. Like we're just stuck where we're at. And I'm like, dude, you're playing 2,000 cap rooms. Like I'm the one complaining about that with my band. You know, like you have to like be, I mean, and it just makes me think about what you're saying, like set your goals, right? Like know when you're accomplishing those minor victories and know when the next step is. And even if there is a next step, right? Like at some point, you got to be happy with where you're at, right?
Totally.
Yep.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. That's the struggle being content too. Cause it's like I hold this goal and yet I know that it's like super not likely. So I don't know. But what helps me too is like detaching my personal identity and fulfillment almost away from it. Like Yam House is me, but I am not Yam House, if that makes sense. Like Yam House embodies some version of myself that is true, but like me as a human being is way more than you. Like I'm so many other things as well. And so like learning to insulate myself and treat it like a job in a healthy way, in a way that I think allows us to have longer, you know, more stamina for it, because I don't have to like bang my head against the wall as if it's like me failing. Like, that helps a lot too. But yeah, who knows, especially with the state of the world being so near the apocalypse, it's going to be hilarious to like, I have no idea what the music industry is going to turn into in the next 5 years.
Like what is a pop band that sells out an arena?
Everything's right. Being rewritten in a super drastic way right now. I just feel that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Big time. I was actually just listening. You know, that Clubhouse app.
It's like my new obsession. I've heard of it, Yeah.
It's amazing. It's like a 24-hour live podcast. I love it. But I was listening to a bunch of touring execs today talk about like all these new regulations across the world that are happening, and even like for visa statuses and like buses going in and out of countries. Like they're saying right now that the current rule right now that they put in place, which they are fighting with the government right now, is that if you are a vehicle, like a touring vehicle or a freight truck or something like that, coming from Europe to the UK, you can only stop in two places and that's it. And then you gotta leave. It's crazy. Like shit like that, you know? And even like stuff with like carnets, which is like all this, you know, like bureaucratic stuff, usually can have one thing that just says, this is everything we have in these three vehicles. This is like for the huge tours or whatever.
Sure.
Right?
Yep.
But now they're saying like you have to have a separate one for every vehicle and they verify it all. But there's no way stuff gets packed perfectly every time into trucks and stuff, right? So it's going to be – I think even when touring comes back because of the new regulations and things like that, specifically with international touring, there's going to be a whole bunch of other hurdles that people are going to have to jump over.
Totally. Even then.
Yeah, man.
We'll see.
If I start thinking about it too much, I get so stressed. I'm like, man, what the hell?
I know, man.
But that's like the nice thing right now, like you said, like everyone is just writing right now. So like as soon as I start thinking about that or like trying to like plan how Yam House is going to succeed or whatever, it's like just keep writing. Like go write a song right now. It's the only thing you can really control. And I'm like, all right. And it's been actually really fruitful, that like idea.
Have you guys spent much time on the road at all?
Yeah, we've played probably around 300 shows, but all regional. Like we've only stayed within like five states. But our big thing is just, you know, totally solo stuff. So we haven't really done like the slick, like rolled out bus stuff where there's like a, you know, really good rider and a tour support or whatever. Like we've just basically done it ourselves. We purchased a van and a trailer. Yeah. So we have like a 12 passenger van.
Yep.
And then we just pull a trailer and we go out probably 2-3 weeks at a time.
Dude, I did that for like 10 years, man. I know that.
Yeah.
We were also told like, we were told right away, like play as many shows as you can in Minneapolis. And then once you feel good there, like go to Milwaukee and Madison and Chicago because we can still go do that little loop and not like lose a ton of money. And that was like crucial right away was to like keep going back to those spots and not go to like Boston for a one trip, like one show and lose a ton of money and then go back and be pissed off that we just lost so much money. Yeah. So
we've done that route a few times where we hit like kind of six regional cities and do like a week and a half tour.
Yeah.
And we're back in our hometown again, which is great.
Yep.
And actually this last year we were going to do our first extended tour, you know, only about a month in the month of June out to the East Coast. And it was just going to be van and trailer, you know, small clubs, and we were going to headline and we were pumped about it. And ironically, we called it the band is going to make it tour. And then literally a global pandemic shut it down. We had to cancel.
We tried to flex. We tried to make our brand like, because we knew we just sold out First Avenue and had a few different awesome management options reaching out to us. And like we were in kind of a courting phase. And then Mark Needham is talking about shopping us to the major labels. And we just kind of had this buzz going on. We were like, dude, let's take this EP and just call it The Band's Gonna Make It. Yeah. And then, so we're like flexing on the world. And the world's like, nah, bro. Nope. I'm going to wipe out the entire industry from which you claim to be trying to make it in. So
good
goodbye.
Luck with the career.
Yeah, things are great.
What have been your favorite venues you've played?
That's a good question.
We were really starting to enjoy some of those Madison and Chicago clubs towards the end of, you know, the normal world we knew before. Where there was some fun, like High Noon Saloon type clubs where it's like, you know, 300 to 500 to 750 type rooms. There's that back room at Collectivo. Yeah. That was really cool.
Summerfest. I think Summerfest was one of our favorite ones.
What's that?
Cities. It's Milwaukee's big summer festival they have every year. I think it's the biggest music festival that goes on with the amount of days and amount of stages and artists that they have a part of it. But we just did, you know, an opening slot at, what was the name of the stage? Something with
American
like...
American Family Insurance or something.
Yeah, American Family Insurance stage.
Yeah, we really love the American Family Insurance stage. That's our favorite thing.
We'll have to take a second to talk about American Family Insurance.
Yeah.
You knew when they reached out, you couldn't say no, just because
of
the community, right?
Yep.
Right.
I think First Avenue is probably our favorite. I mean, it's like a low hanging fruit to say that, but it's true. I mean, playing at First Avenue. Yeah. And being from here, you just have that much more of like a hype about it in your brain.
Yep.
I'm trying to remember all that. What, Triple Rock is there, right?
Yeah. That closed down.
It went under.
Oh, it's gone?
One of like the last shows there.
Yeah.
Shut down.
Before the pandemic though, which is hilarious. Like that was in like 2018 that they closed.
That was a while ago.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I remember I always used to, my old band toured at the bank called Take Cover from there. And we played there with them a few times.
Oh, cool.
That's sweet.
Yeah, they're great.
Minneapolis has got a lot of great venues.
What's that?
Minneapolis has so many great venues.
They really do a lot of good ones. They really do.
I hope I'm not getting this wrong. Is that giant one with the three different rooms and the crazy swimming pool?
That's Mobile Armory.
Oh, no, that's the rave. Yeah, it's
the Wave in Milwaukee, right. Yeah. That's right. Another MI. My bad.
That's a fun one, though.
We've never played there.
It's like down below.
Yeah, it's pretty weird. It's pretty cool. It's pretty spooky.
Is it?
Yeah, there's like I know that the hotel like across the street from it.
Yeah.
Right? That's where
Jeffrey Dahmer
ate those people.
Jeffrey Dahmer. And apparently he used to go, there's a tunnel from the venue to the hotel, and he used to bring them through the tunnel from, because it was like a nightclub.
No.
Yeah, that's spooky. Yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah, so from the venue, which was a nightclub at the time, he would bring people back through the tunnel to the hotel, and that's where he would.
You can write a song about that with your group. Yeah, that's unreal. That's,
yeah. We're actually in the middle of doing our Hannibal Lecter one right now. So
love it.
Yeah. That's it. I'm not even supposed to say that. Now everyone knows it. Oh, well.
That's awesome.
All right, so the way we always kind of wrap up our podcasts is with tour stories. And I know you guys haven't done like a crazy big tour or whatever, but I imagine you probably have some good ones just being in the van and trailer in the winter, in the cold and stuff like that. Right. Yeah. Actually, yeah. Let me tell one real quick, because I want to.
Yeah.
And the only I hope I haven't already told this one on the podcast, but and it's just similar to your being stranded in Nashville one. And it just made me think of it. When we were on tour in 2014, my band was doing a tour that started on the West Coast in January. And we're from Boston. So we booked like four or five shows out, but we hit, it was right when people started knowing what Polar Vortex was, because this was the first one, I guess, or like the first one that people started talking about.
It's a good foreshadow.
Yeah. So we're driving through Ohio, and it's starting to snow, and I was the one actually driving, and I was just like, I just got to pull over to pee or something at a rest area. And it started like really coming down to the point that we could no longer move at the rest area. We were just stuck. And there's all these other trucks stuck too. And even if we wanted to move, there were so many trucks stuck in front of us, we couldn't.
No.
Our van had about an eighth of a tank of gas in it.
No.
So we had to turn it off.
Yep.
And it dropped to negative 35.
Oh.
Nope. No way.
And we slept in the van. Like we had bunks built in our van because we like spent eight months out of the year on tour.
Sure.
And we were cozy. Like I was comfortable to the extent that I could be, but we woke up and the entire inside of the van was coated in like a half an inch of ice because of all the condensation.
Oh my God.
So we had to spend like 2 hours like chipping away at the windshield, like all the windows just so we could see. It was insane. We had like some electrical issues after because like, stuff melted once we turned the van on. It was wild. But we got out.
That's a nightmare. That beats anything we would have crazy to say.
Well, that's like a nightmare, like shitty story. We've had some good funny ones too.
I have a good shitty one. That is the first tour. This is what I thought of me when you said that. We have a great friend named Patrick, and he was one of our first friend manager type vibes. And this is our first ever, like, all right, we're going away from home for like a week, couple weeks or something, you know? We were in, was it Milwaukee?
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. So we were in Milwaukee, and this was when the summer of the bird scooter, the OGs were birds.
Yeah.
So we all hop just on our birds. Out. Yeah. We just came out. The birds are this cool thing. We all get the app. And
I think we had a show the night before and then we had a day off.
So we had a day off.
Just hauling ass everywhere.
First day off. The sun is shining. It's summertime in Milwaukee. Things are so great. Our first ever little tour.
We were living the dream.
Living the dream.
Playing shows, riding bird scooters.
Yep. And we all split up to do our own things in our bird scooters. And Jake was with Patrick.
Yep.
And Patrick did not see. They're cruising down this really big,
hill.
City street. Yeah, hill, kind of downhill. And there's this huge, like, metal plate in the road that has, like, a 2-3 inch thick, sort of like, all of a sudden you're hitting a ledge.
No.
And Patrick didn't see it. And he hits that thing and proceeds to catapult over his bird thing and crack his collarbone in half.
Holy shit, dude.
In the middle of an intersection.
And so, And so then we have to like go figure that out with him. And then I go into, I have like a panic attack. Cause I'm like, let's get the fuck off these freaking bird scooters. And cause afterwards we're all like, all right, let's keep scootering. I'm like, let's not keep scootering. If this happens one more time, we all got to go home. And we're all just yelling at each other. And Patrick's miserable. And did he go home?
He went home.
He went home early.
How did he get home?
He was in the hospital and then
scootered home.
Like Amanda went.
He scootered home.
Took a scooter. No, somebody had an extra car somehow, and he went home with them.
Just lying around.
Maybe it was Kayla. Kayla and Mayor. Yeah.
We had an extra car along with our van and trailer, and they took off early.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
So that was like a traumatizing.
Yeah, that was intense. We all ate tacos that night and talked it over.
But it was. It didn't affect the tour at all.
No, we made it through. I mean, it was a bummer to not have Pat because he was really helpful with logistics and driving. Sure. And he was sort of a quasi-tour manager. But yeah, with the broken collarbone, it was sayonara.
Yeah, that's tough.
What about, let me ask you this. Have you guys had any injuries on the road? Not to jinx it. Knock on
wood.
Yeah,
right. Yeah, I don't think we have.
Be my fault.
Not with the three of us. No, it's okay.
Zach hurt his back one time, I think.
Zach's just.
I'm old, so I hurt my back.
Dude, I have a hurt back right now, so I get it.
Oh,
it's all good.
Yeah, man.
Suck, dude.
It's the worst.
Yeah, you were lifting a log one time.
Yeah, it wasn't on tour, but we were still like playing shows, and I was just trying to be like funny, and I lifted up this like really big log, and I like sprained my wrist.
So you had to like wear a little like.
You're gonna have to explain to me. Why lifting up a really big log was
funny. Zach's cabin.
We felt the same way.
We had a weekend off at Zach's cabin, and I was about to take off from the cabin, and these guys were doing a workout.
Yeah,
outside.
We were like lifting, and we were like, let's go lift these like logs in here. So
I mean, that just means they're out there lifting logs.
You guys
That's the most like Minnesota shit I've ever heard.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And I was like, oh, yeah, let's do it. I think I took off my shirt, and I was like, I'm just going to lift this log. And it was way heavier than I thought, and I wasn't using proper back support. And I think my wrist just kind of
sprained his wrist on a heavy log.
Yeah.
That's what happened.
Not good for the drummer.
I am all about – if you sustain an injury and it's part of it, – it's at the expense of a joke, it's okay to me. Like, it's worth it. Like, everything is worth the comedy to me, so.
I didn't think anyone thought it was funny.
It was just like Jake was stepping in hot to have a funny standout moment, and then he all of a sudden is in pain, and we're like, is this part of the joke?
Yeah.
We're all, like, just confused.
Yeah, the bit's over.
You're like, oh. And I'm like, is this part of the joke?
Yeah.
And then he's like, no, I'm actually hurt. I'm like, this is just weird.
Oh, man. Yeah. I had a similar story where no one knew if I was actually hurt or not, but it happened on stage. I don't think you can still see it on the camera, but I have a scar here, and it's because our guitar player put his peg of his guitar through my lip.
No!
When we were playing. It was really bad. It was really bad. Like, a full hole in my mouth, right? Like, I could stick my tongue through it. It was awful. But because we're a theatrical metal band, and we have things like happening everywhere. No one knew that I was hurt.
Yeah.
Right? So I was just bleeding all down.
They thought it was like part of the stage theatrics?
Yeah, but even our tour manager who's on the side stage, our wardrobe girl and like our monitor guy, they were like, oh, I didn't know we were doing blood capsules.
Oh my God.
No, dude, I'm dying right now. I need
that's scary. Someone could come up on stage for you guys and like stab you all, and people would be like, oh, this is so cool that they did that.
When you see our live stream, okay, you're going to truly understand. Like, that exact scenario is a scripted moment that happens multiple times.
No,
that's insane. Are
you guys Guar fans?
Yeah. I mean, I would say I am inspired by, just the level of commitment that they have, right? Like, it's amazing.
Yeah.
If you ever get the chance, when you eventually go play Virginia, make sure you go to the Guar Bar.
Oh my God.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, because there's a guy in Gore that owns a bar down there because they're from there, and it's full of all of their shit, like all the stuff they use on stage and everything. And if you tell him like you're in a band and stuff, if he's there, he'll take you to the Gore warehouse where they have everything, right? Dude. It's awesome. You gotta go. It's amazing. All right. Well, thank you. We've kept you for like about an hour now, so I want to thank you guys for your time. But before Absolutely. We go, I know you guys have stuff. You've put out Pop Game came out fairly recently, right? I guess that's – was that the most recent release you guys have had?
I think so, yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
I actually know Christmas stuff, but yeah.
Oh, right, the Christmas one, yeah. So you have some new releases. You guys put out a good amount of music this last year, didn't you?
Yeah,
we put out an EP and then a couple singles and then another EP.
Christmas EP, yeah.
I love that EP, man. I love
Thank
it.
Thank you.
It's Thanks, so dude. Good. But yeah, where can people, just before we wrap up, find you guys online, name of the album, all that kind of stuff? We'll put all that in the description too, but even your personal social stuff like that, if you want to promote that stuff.
Yeah, you can follow us. Everything that we have to update about usually can be found at yamhouse.com.
Yep.
And then we're on all the streaming platforms that I can think of, at least. And then our personal socials are Zach Beinlich, Lawrence Pruitt, Seth Bloom, and Jake Felstow. And yeah, you can just follow us on social media. We do. We did put out a couple EPs last year, but this year we're excited to just continue the single game. So look out for we're putting out a cover next week of Stevie Wonder's version or our version of Stevie Wonder's song Sir Duke, and so that's coming out next Friday.
I am so excited for that.
Yeah, it's
Josh
it's
looks
it's,
like he's very excited too.
Man, that was an awesome reaction.
Yeah, dude. Yeah. And then we have another single coming out after that soon. It's called Novocaine. I'm excited about it.
Awesome.
Yeah.
All right, sweet. So you heard it. Check it out, Yam House, on all the streaming platforms. Guys, thank you so much. This was a lot of fun.
Thank you.
Thank you great. So much for having
Appreciate
us.
You.
Yeah, awesome.
Absolutely. Man. All right, take care, guys. All right?
You too, man.
Yeah. See ya.
Seeing double. Tell the whole squad out the back door, man, I think it's time to huddle. Yeah. We're in trouble. Wrote a pop song, tried to pop off, but I think we popped a bubble. And we run around, but now I know we're tired of the nonsense. All the things we can't control. Really, really messes with a healthy mindset. Are we there yet? Or is this just how it goes? So you wanna play the pop game? Said you never, never will change. But I don't believe you. No, I don't. So you wanna play the pop game? Said it always goes the same way. But I don't. Triple coverage. Had it mapped out, but you spaced out. Man, you didn't see it coming. Yeah.
This is the story of Whitney Houston.
This is the story of Kurt Cobain.
Of George Michael, of Otis Redding, of Amy Winehouse, of Michael Hutchence, Bob Marley. This is the story of Prince.
It's a new podcast series.
About how they died, why they died, and why we're still talking about them so long after.
It's like nothing you've ever heard before.
It's storytelling.
But it's more than that, because rock stars,
they tell us how we feel. They change our mood.
They change the clothes we wear, the people we hang out with,
the way we remember things.
It's them who give us those ludicrous moments, the ones where you're
jumping around, singing your heart out, feeling understood.
And it's those moments we'll help you remember, the ones you're thinking about right now.
That feeling.
That feeling.
It's coming soon from Crowd Network.
Just search for Death of a Rockstar on your podcast app.
And subscribe now.